Dennis asked me today if chicks had two holes or three.
Did not.
How could you not know that, dude?
Oh, yeah, I forgot I was hanging with the Poontang clan back here.
I get it, their four kids are dead, but I'm sorry. This is still pretty choice.
No shit. Next thing we have to do is find a psycho who's offing chicks who don't give head.
Yeah, then I'd only have to worry about one hole.
Junk food supper.
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 Junk food
supper.
Junk food supper.
Junk food supper.
Junk food supper.
Junk food supper.
Junk food supper.
Junk food supper.
Welcome to Junk Food Supper, a podcast where pretty much every week we get together and talk about weird movies and all kinds of crazy stuff. I am Parker, joined as always by Sean Byron. Sean Byron, how are you doing?
I'm doing not too bad. It's officially Schlocktober now, I feel like.
It is now official, yeah.
Yeah.
This is the first spooky movie. I mean, unless like the next movie you pick is like a rom-com. Like, I mean, I guess we could pull it back if we wanted to, but it seems like this is the official beginning of Schlocktober.
Yeah, it's now I feel like it's all on me. You know, there's a lot of responsibility not to totally Fredo an entire month by making the wrong choice at the end of this episode.
Yeah, a lot of pressure. There's a lot of pressure on you right now.
I know, and I got to be honest, there's a certain series of films that I've really kind of set my heart on.
You're talking about the Saw movies? You want to do all those Saw movies in anticipation of the new one coming out?
It's not really a specific franchise that's owned by one film studio. It's kind of just like a loosely joined series of films, maybe based on older source material. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I see what you're saying. You just picked one book at random from the library and you decided to base all your movie picking around this book.
Yeah. But good news for you, that book is Saw.
Oh, yeah.
The Saw book. Yeah.
Yeah, the Saw book. The Book of Saw. That is the subtitle of the most recent Saw movie.
Is it really?
Yeah, it's called like, what was that Chris Rock one? Yeah, it was called like Jigsaw from the Book of Saw or something like that.
What is in that Book of Saw, I wonder? Does it have pictures, at least?
I don't think. I think it's like a Blair Witch Part 2 Book of Shadows thing, where like it's subtitled that, but then there's no actual book.
I guess there was no Book of Shadows in that, right?
Mm-mm.
Did they at least in the opening credits have some kind of Necronomicon-esque, like illustrated book kind of sequence? Maybe in the credits.
No, they didn't have anything like that. There wasn't even a Blair Witch in that movie.
Yeah, well, there's barely a Blair Witch in the first one, right?
Well, that's a good point.
We should actually, maybe I'll shortlist that. It's not going to be this week's pick because, like I said, I got this series that I'm really hung up on. But eventually, we should watch that one, right?
I think so. Yeah, it's been on my. I feel like it's a very Schlocktober-y movie. It's been on my list to do. I think the Blair Witch gets more interesting as we live in a more YouTube-centric society where like everybody's making TikToks of every single thing that happens to them. I think that movie gets more and more interesting with every passing year.
Yeah, and you know, I think we live now in a time where there's a lot of like blending of the truth and like what is real, and you know, these guys are showing up on my news feeds talking to Congress about UFOs and all this stuff, and it's like all this convergence of like, you know, spaghetti men on the internet, these tall ass spaghetti men, you know, these pasta peoples that people are creeped out by. But these guys, I mean, Blair Witch, they were way ahead of that.
Yeah, that they were.
So kudos to them, even if that sequel didn't work out.
Yeah. I used to like that sequel. When it first came out, I was like, oh yeah, this is a banger. And then I watched it a few years ago and I was like, well, maybe not. But who knows? Maybe I'll watch it again in a couple more years and we'll like it. But nobody else liked it. That is true. It did ruin the entire franchise for many years.
Yeah, well, I mean, they were doomed to fail when it's like such a... I mean, like, the appeal of the original is that it looks like it was shot by some untrained college kids, you know? Like, so then to, like, create, like, a slick studio sequel that looks like a real movie, like, there's no way that would have worked.
That is true, yeah. They should have just did the same thing over again, really. Like, that's all you can do.
Yeah. Or move into a new medium, you know, do the Blair Witch podcast. You could have invented podcasting in 2003 or whenever they made that movie to do that.
It could have worked too.
Oh, well.
Yeah. Well, what are you doing these days that is Schlocktober? Are you getting into the season yet?
Now that you put the qualifier on that inquiry, you know, Schlocktobery, now I got nothing. If we can open it up to just general, what have y'all been doing in the past 2.5 days since we saw each other or podcasted with each other? I got a couple things. You know, it was a real whirlwind of a weekend. I went from watching Peyton Place in my pajamas to partying with Parker in Palm Springs. As I'm sure we'll get into, we'll do a deep dive on that. But I saw one movie that I wanted to recommend to people that I thought was really good. It's a documentary called Whirly Bird that came out in 2020. Do you know about this Whirly Bird?
I never heard about this bird.
It's, like I said, it's a documentary from a few years ago that centers around a husband and wife helicopter news piloting team where like they kind of like pioneered the whole industry of covering news from a helicopter. They had this independent news operation that they started in like the early 1980s. And then it goes all throughout the 80s and 90s in LA. And, you know, they cover all these incredible stories, pretty much everything that you remember ever happening in LA. Any like aerial shot that you remember probably came from this husband and wife team. And then it kind of turns into this really interesting meditation on sort of like what it means to live in a city and sort of like what is the role of the news media in our society. I thought it was really good. And it's free on Canopy, that the library streaming service app. And it's easy to find elsewhere.
That sounds very interesting. I actually just watched a video last night about on YouTube about this event that happened like 10 years ago or something where like three news helicopters were following a high speed chase through like, I don't think it was LA. It might've been in like Texas or something. And two of them, because they were so busy trying to watch the high speed race, just hit each other and fell out of the sky. These two helicopters. And it was like, it happened live on TV. Like one of the other news stations caught it on TV and, yeah, pretty wild stuff. Like wild to think that cops are so eager to get somebody and give them a $30 speeding ticket that they have to do these 120 mile per hour high speed chases all the time. And then also that these lecherous television, news stations are so eager to follow this bullshit that they, will just crash into helicopters and plummet to their dooms.
Yeah. I think it's more of the latter in terms of at least like the helicopters. I don't think that the police necessarily want these journalists like chasing the criminals around town, but I think it is that kind of lecherous news media and especially in the 90s, this kind of like insatiable, you know, thirst for blood when it came to news reporting.
Yeah. Especially TV news. TV news is the worst. They're just ambulance chasers, basically. I don't like the TV news.
Yeah, there is good work being done in journalism, but it's mostly in terms of Central Valley newspapers.
Yeah, really just wherever I'm working at the time, that's who's doing the good work, I feel.
Yeah. Well, as long as they're covering the stories at the Kelly Slater Surf Ranch, I think that is true.
Yeah, those stories and things like that. Also, whichever NPR affiliate is interviewing me, I think that those those journalism outlets are also really good.
Did this happen recently?
a couple months ago. Yeah, I thought I mentioned it, but maybe I didn't. But I'm like kind of shy about it. I don't know. I kind of played it close to the vest, I guess. Maybe
they They were inquiring about your Ghoul Summer favorites, or for what reason was NPR talking to you?
They just wanted to ask about Beelzebub and how much I liked his movies and stuff. I wrote this really big like story about like the lake here. Like there was like a lake that existed here for like millions of years, and then America came in and dammed it all up so that they could build like cotton farms and soybean farms and whatever. And because of all the flooding that happened here in California this year, the lake is back, like it flooded back up. And I wrote this big long story about the history of the lake and everything like this, and NPR was apparently pleased with it. So I did an interview with them like 4 months ago, something like that. So it's out there in the world if you guys are interested in the history of lakes.
I mean, if it's a Bowman, you know, centric take on lakes, I'm into it, you know?
It is. I had to read a lot of old-timey almanacs and geology books and stuff to do enough research for it, but it paid off.
I love it.
I'll send you the link. I'll try to find it. I think it's weird. It's like weird that I'm like talking to somebody and not trying to like make Corey Feldman jokes. Like it's unnatural for me. So I don't know that I even posted it on Facebook or anything.
Did they have to cut all of the references that you made to Gwar and Buffy the Vampire Slayer and all?
They did. They had to cut the all the times that I played this drop during the interview.
Kevin, please come over for gay sex.
But strangely, they left in the Tim Allen drops. But, I mean, they look great in print.
Yeah, yeah. But, I saw that you did some stuff this week in addition to watching movies about helicopters.
Oh, did I?
You did. You took a picture of the cool Sands Motel sign that I wanted to take a picture of, and I forgot to turn back around and do it. So you got that. So I'm very happy about that.
The Great Sands Motel of Palm Desert, California. Not to be confused with the Sands in Las Vegas, although the signage is similar. It's definitely the same font as the classic Sands in Vegas. Cool sign. I was happy to photo it.
Lots of good signage out there. Did you get to see a lot of stuff? We went to, we were both in like Palm Springs, Yucca Valley, Palm Desert area, and they got magnificent signs out there. Truly wonderful.
Yeah, I mean, well, let's not bury the lead. We met up not for signage. We met up for German pancakes. And for my money, even though there was no Dutch baby on the menu, that German pancake was very good.
That was delicious. I actually had a lot of regrets after we went to that place because you guys had the German pancakes and I went with a more savory option. I just had like a normal, you know, sausage and bacon and everything like this.
I think they called it the lumberjack plate. Don't be shy. You can self-identify as a lumberjack. That is your fuck style.
I was wearing a flannel at the time. But yeah, I was definitely a little bit jealous afterwards because you guys had the right idea to go with that sweet stuff because that was tasty.
Yeah, I mean, this is a pro tip to anybody out there listening. If you do find yourself at a Elmer's restaurant, which I think is 99% confined to like the Seattle area, but they got one down in Palm Springs. If you find yourself at Elmer's, try those German pancakes. They're delicious.
We'll have to stop at one in Seattle on our way up to Twin Peaks, which I feel like will be our next JFD meetup after marches in Cincinnati. We're going to have to meet in the Twin Peaks town.
That may just be a JFS meetup, if you catch my drift.
Yeah, just us two.
Yeah.
And Justin, if he wants to come.
Yeah, I'm down to see how Elmer's compares to the Double R Diner, which you can also go there. That's still there, still in operation.
I would like that very much as well.
My memory is that the food was not that great.
I would imagine that's true. They probably just skate by on the name alone. They don't need to go above and beyond and have good food.
Yeah. Yeah. But it was cool to be there. Cool sign. Again, cool sign. Speaking of signs, though, I did not get around to photographing that cool car wash elephant sign in Palm Springs. I alluded to that when we met up, but ran out of time.
Yeah. Well, that's, you got to go back. It's a nice, it's a weird little place. It's like time stopped there. I was, I mean, I told you about the Tai Bo place I found. I mean, it's like time stopped once in like the 50s with all the architecture. And then it stopped again in terms of like stores and stuff in like the 90s. It's a really cool place.
By the way, I'm not sure if you got this feeling, but I got to say, this was my first time to Palm Desert since the pandemic. I think I went there in 2019, maybe. You know, I've been to the Joshua Tree Park a few times. And rolling through Palm Desert this time feels like they put a lot of work into that town. I mean, it's still like a small little town, just kind of the one main drag, but there's like all these new coffee shops and like it's not old ass dusty thrift stores anymore. It's like kind of cool hipstery thrift stores where you get to pay like five times as much for anything. Mm-hmm. But you might see a cool girl, cute looking girl working at the counter. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, there was a lot of stuff that seemed new there. I think in, like on the other side, in Yucca Valley, did you go that far?
No, we basically went up to like the, you know, the north entrance or whatever, like that kind of northwest corner.
Okay, yeah, on the, a little bit further up is Yucca Valley, and it's still very like old school and kind of worn down. I stopped there, that's where I ate, and that's where the concert I went to was, and it's... And the first time I went there and I went to 29 Palms, which is also, I think that that's where the Tai Bo place is or was like 6 years ago. But yeah, both of those places on the northern side are like, the northern, like there's like mountains or like a valley or something in between Palm Springs and 29 Palms. And yeah, that northern side is still a little bit dilapidated from what I could gather, what I gleaned.
Yeah, but it, I mean, it's wild to see all this development going into Palm Desert. Like even that Spaghetti Western saloon that you pointed out, that looks like it's new and probably has cool young owners in their 30s or whatever, you know?
Could be, yeah. It like there's like bands playing there and stuff. So yeah, it seems like a hopping joint.
Yeah. I had a good time out there. I should have went there.
Yeah, I thought about going there, but I haven't seen enough Django movies, so they probably would have kicked me out.
Yeah. Speaking of seeing things, how was the concert?
It was delightful. I went to see Roger Klein and the Peacemakers, one of my favorite bands, and they played forever. The show started at 9, and they didn't stop playing until like 1:30 or 2 or something like that, which was like pretty wild. I was very sleepy afterwards. But yeah, it was fun. They played a bunch of good songs. I like those guys a lot. They're from Arizona and they have a lot of songs about like how cool and melancholy the desert is. So to see them in the actual desert is a lot of fun. So it's like very thematic, you know, cause Pappy and Harriet's where it was is sort of an outside venue a little bit. So you're in the actual desert. It was a lot of fun. It was fun. It was worth the drive, worth the 10 hours or whatever I spent in the car over the course of 24 hours.
Yeah, man, that's commitment. And to do it, you know, while the sun was out, you're beaten down on you. Like that is kind of your own little spaghetti Western style adventure that you were on.
It's true. Yeah. I haven't seen them. Like I've probably seen them like 30 times in my life or something like that, but I haven't seen them since before. For COVID. So I was due. I was due to see him again. So I, and like the other, like, I don't think they've like played anywhere closer really. Like they played in LA and San Francisco. So it's like, if I'm going to drive 4 or 5 hours, I might as well head out to the desert and see him. So it was exciting. It was fun.
Very nice. Yeah. Well, speaking of fun, are you in the mood to have a fun little segment here at the top of the show?
Oh, I love segments. They're my favorite.
Well, excellent. So for this week's segment, I was thinking, you know, there's been a lot of Halloween-ish wrestling content over the years. To be honest, I was thinking at one point of picking for Schlocktober one of the entire Halloween Havoc events. I don't know if I actually will get around to doing that because they're kind of long, and you know, parts of them are extremely boring. But maybe someday I will. But you know, ahead of that, I thought, hey, you know, we could probably just watch one scary wrestling match and talk about it. So I picked one starring Freddy Krueger, who, surprise, surprise, probably surprise to a lot of listeners of the show, he had a wrestling career, mostly in Japan, but I think he showed up in ECW once and maybe a few other places in the U.S. And it's going to be Freddy Krueger versus Leatherface, another legendary, you know, denizen of Schlocktober films. This is a Japanese match from 1993, and it was uploaded by a guy named The Crypt Keeper to YouTube. It's about 11 minutes long. And yeah, I figured we all just, you know, watch this and give a little running commentary on what we see between the, you know, the battle of these two titans.
I like the sound of that. This is the kind of Schlocktober content I'm into. So
excellent. So I've got my video loaded. I think you've got it loaded. If mm-hmm. you out there want to follow along, just go to YouTube, search for Freddy versus Leatherface, Japan, 1993. It should come up, about 11 minutes long. And without further ado, I guess we'll do a quick little countdown and hit play. So okay. 3, 2, 1, and then I'll say play. And as I'm saying play, that's when I'm hitting play.
Perfect.
All right. 3, 2, 1, play. All right. Yeah, looks
this
like
is exciting for me. I've heard a lot about Freddy and Leatherface being wrestlers, but I've seen like one or two Leatherface matches, but I've never seen any Freddy matches. I've seen pictures and stuff.
Oh, really? Well, yeah. I'll say, first of all, it's a little bit jarring to see these guys, especially Freddy, out in the daylight, out in the sunlight. Yeah. This is an outdoor event. It's very sunny looking. A barbed wire bat has been presented. That's the first image that we saw. I guess I should give a little bit of background. So this is from an event called Wing Odawara Blazing Night that took place at the Municipal Baseball Stadium in Odawara, Kanagawa, Japan. Attendance, about 2,980 people. The type of match we're going to be seeing between these competitors is called a Scramble Bunkhouse Death Match. I don't know what the hell that means, but that's how this was billed. And Freddy here is being played by a guy named Doug Gilbert, who was the brother of Eddie Gilbert, who you might remember from early ECW days. Mm-hmm. Doug Gilbert had this gimmick for a while, but he did a lot of other gimmicks as well. He was active from 1986 through, looks like today, although he's slowed down considerably. He's still active. We got a big countdown going on. It looks like the dudes are running in the ring. This is on, man.
Yeah. I like any kind of wrestling match that starts out with barbed wire, baseball bat hits. Like
to the throat.
Locking up, nothing.
Yeah, right to the throat. Looks like Leatherface is pissed and he landed a real left cross there for real. Leatherface is being played by a dude named Mike Penzel, who played a lot of gimmicks from 1980 onwards, but I guess is maybe most well-known as Corporal Kirshner, who was the replacement for Sergeant Slaughter in the 1980s in WWF.
Okay. I vaguely remember that.
Kirshner, yeah. And I don't know where the hell these two guys are already. They barely spend any time in the ring. They're not even in the audience. They're in some like weird holding pen area or something. What is this area that they're in?
Yeah, there's like a weird tarp around the ring, kind of like around the audience. And they got lost in the tarp. I do like that they're like attacking the audience, though. That's super fun. Like,
yeah,
in between beating each other up, like Freddie will just run at audience members with a 2x4.
And for sure, some of these people running away from Freddy and Leatherface must be injuring themselves. Like, this is like a Great White Concert Fire scenario times 10.
Yeah,
look at that
just
poor
chairs.
Old lady. They're helping her away from the scene of this crime. You see that?
That's great.
All these metal folding chairs are getting, like, thrown at people. And, I mean, at a minimum, you're getting, like, a shiner on your leg.
Yeah. This is wonderful. Leatherface actually recently showed up in AEW, but it was not this Leatherface. It was like actual Leatherface as part of like a promotion for the new video game that came out. Did you see that?
Oh, no, I didn't see that. Yeah, that's cool. Although I think it's a little cooler when it's like fully unlicensed. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Absolutely. I can't believe these guys didn't get sued for this. Although if Freddy, when they showed like their names on the screen, Freddy Krueger is spelled with a C. So maybe that's how you get away with it.
Yeah. And also this sweatshirt that has the wrong number of stripes and I think the wrong color of stripes is maybe also, you know, plausible deniability for them.
Yeah. And I mean, I don't know what the rules are in Japan or whatever, but like maybe there aren't any, maybe that's how they get away with it. But also it's like very clearly parody. Like, I think you'd have a hard time suing anybody over this.
Did Leatherface just move the ring mat away so that he could attack Freddy on top of the other ring mat?
Like, I think so.
That was a big waste.
Yeah.
Decent little moonsault kind of thing there from Leatherface, though.
Yeah, that's intense.
For a big fat dude.
Yeah. I mean, those mats are like not thick at all. And for him to come down knees first under the cement was pretty intense.
There was also around this time in the mid-90s in Japan, a dude wrestling as Jason Voorhees. I think there was a Chucky, unless I'm out of my mind and just thinking that something I dreamed about was real. But there was a few of these guys. Oh, there was a Pinhead as well, I believe. And I would love to have the time to put together like a compilation of all these unlicensed horror wrestling matches from Japan, because I think they're a lot of fun.
Yeah. I would imagine that they still happen. I'd imagine that there's probably like matches you can watch right now that like with like the scary monster from like The Grudge and The Ring and stuff like that. I would think that that's still a thing.
Facing off against Jigsaw, perhaps.
Yeah.
And Freddy Krueger going in for that pin attempt way too early. What are you thinking, Freddy Krueger? You're not going to get a three count.
Not at all.
That's brutal.
Yeah. Now you might get that three count after hitting a man in the chest with a baseball bat. Like, do these guys have like, I mean, like they've got like big baggy clothes on and stuff. So like, it's possible that they're wearing like bulletproof vests underneath to protect them from some of this. But like, I don't know how you take like just a baseball bat to the chest like that otherwise.
I think it's, you know, a lot of whiskey after the show.
Yeah. In the adoration of all these Japanese citizens.
They love it, man. It has completely devolved, though. Like, this is no longer a wrestling contest. This is an all-out brawl.
Yeah. Also, like, wrestling in any kind of mask probably sucks, but, like, this is very clearly just, like, a Halloween store Freddy mask. Like, it's probably so hot and so hard to see in that thing.
And it's made of the kind of plastic that releases chemicals, like, directly into your bloodstream, you know, and it smells like latex.
Yeah.
Oh, Leatherface is pissed again. He's just throwing real punches now. Punched Freddy in the armpit. Yeah, so I'm pretty sure this match didn't win Dave Meltzer's match of the year.
Probably not, but I've seen the kind of wrestling he likes.
Yeah.
It's just dude's like
obsessed with spinning toe holds.
Yeah, due to applying an arm bar for 20 minutes, so I like this better than that.
This is back when we still had real tables in wrestling that weren't specifically designed to be broken.
Yeah.
That's a fun era. Look at all those steel support beams on the bottom of that table. Unbreakable.
That table's like half metal. It's going to hurt so bad.
Let's see how this goes. Oh, Freddy. You done fucked up again. It looks like Leatherface is going to win this, but I had my money on Freddy coming in.
I feel like I hear more about Leatherface as a wrestler than Freddy, so I feel like maybe he's a bigger star, so that I think he's probably going to win because of that. Despite the fact that Freddy, IRL Freddy, is more famous than Leatherface.
Yeah. Well, maybe it's the daytime advantage.
Yeah. Nobody's sleepy out here.
Exactly.
Okay, you're going
to... Ooh. That was not right.
Powerbomb a man on an unset up table.
On like the edge of it.
Yeah.
It's not a clean landing.
He's definitely got spinal injuries now.
You know, I guess Nancy and the gang on Elm Street should have just watched this match if they wanted to know how to vanquish Freddy Krueger.
I would definitely like that first Freddy movie a lot more if Nancy had just powerbombed Freddy onto a table.
I mean, it's kind of close with the Home Alone antics. They almost get there. Might as well go all the way.
Yeah.
Pull out a power slam.
This is a classic match. This is one of the best matches I've ever seen. I love it.
And the crowd could not be more thrilled that Leatherface is victorious. His arms raised in triumph, his droopy mask drooping off his face. But Freddy's not done.
Who could have foreseen that Freddy would be a villain? Yeah. Attack a man after the bell.
He's a poor sport. This is not good sportsmanship from old Freddy Krueger. Damn, dude, that's not a barbed wire bat. That's like a bat with crazy looking nails in it.
Yeah.
This does not look safe.
Not one bit. He's going to get tetanus.
Dude, even the ring announce guy is like, that's fucked up. You better stop that. Man, that's some balls on that ring announce guy, though. I can't believe he's even standing nearby this.
Yeah. The sun has kind of gone down over the course of the match. No wonder Freddy's so strong here at the end.
Yeah. I guess that means this was the main event, if the sun is setting. And yeah, as it should be, I suppose. I don't think I would like wrestling outdoors, to see an event outdoors. But I guess I would make an exception for these two guys.
Yeah.
All of the chairs are being knocked over again.
I like that it's just like normal wrestlers have come out to help Leatherface. Not other horror dudes, probably just normal guys.
Well, he respects the Japanese of this country.
Well, yeah.
What is the chant that the Japanese fans are doing?
I assume it's probably whatever the Japanese words for Leatherface are, but I have no clue.
We'll never know. It's been lost to time. And that was Freddy versus Leatherface, Japan, 1993. Hope you enjoyed it.
I did. This was a fantastic match.
Now, can you tell me what a scramble bunkhouse death match is?
It seemed like just like a normal hardcore match to me.
Yeah, I guess that's fair.
I don't know why. They weren't really scrambling. There was no bunkhouse involved.
They kind of scrambled at the beginning to like get to the ring quickly. I don't know. Yeah. Does that count for anything?
Oh, yeah. I think, isn't that what they did? They like scrambled to run to the ring to be the first person to grab the bat.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
Okay. Well, congratulations, Leatherface.
Yeah. And congratulations to everyone. God bless us, everyone. There are no voicemails this week, so
what?
I guess we'll just... Yeah, I know.
That doesn't count as a voicemail.
It's very upsetting.
We could just play the Mr. Brian from New York theme song and reminisce about the times that people called us in the past.
Okay, let me just play that.
It's time for the percolator. It's time for the percolator. It's time for the percolator.
I love that remix.
Yep. So send us some voicemails. I don't have the voicemail number pulled up. But, you know, just go to facebook.com/junkfooddinner and click the call now button. Go to junkfooddinner.com. They'll tell you there what the phone number is. Let's see, 347-746-JUNK. That's 347-746-5865. Send us a voicemail. Let us know what you're doing for Schlocktober. Kevin's going to be back next week. ask Kevin life advice. He'll answer it. He'll tell you what to do. So I guess we're going to take a break while you think up your life advice needs. And when we come back, we are going to be talking about Cherry Falls, finally, after many, many years. So stick around.
I remember the story like this. It was a dark and scary night, kind of like tonight.
25 years ago, a horrible crime was committed in the town of Cherry Falls. Now.
You haven't heard about Rod and Stacy?
Did they break up?
Break up! Wake up! They're dead!
What their parents hid in the past.
Nobody has seen or heard of her for over 25 years.
Mom, do you know anything about a woman named Laura Lee Sherman?
No. Why?
Is haunting the present.
Who is it?
Is your mom home?
No.
She didn't tell you I was coming by.
Four teenagers have been killed. A fifth viciously attacked.
All victims appeared to be virgins.
Federalists decided to take themselves off the endangered species list and have sex.
I need to ask you a personal question. About how far are you going, base-wise? Can you go further?
Tell me about Laura Lee Sherman, tell me!
That was 25 years ago.
Do you think she goes all the way?
Doubt it.
You gotta come, come on!
This is my post, I can't just split!
Cherry Falls.
Did you want your first time to be something beautiful, something romantic?
Welcome back to Junk Food Supper. This week we are talking about Cherry Falls, a 2000 movie directed by Jeffrey Wright, who you may remember from doing the movie Romper Stomper.
And, of course.
Apparently a remake of Romper Stomper that came out in 2018.
Oh, I didn't know that. Did he direct that, really?
Yep.
Oh, wow. I thought this movie killed his career outright.
Yeah, you would think so. But he also did a version of Macbeth in 2006 that I've actually been wanting to see. I didn't realize this was the same director, but it's like a modern day Macbeth where it's like Macbeth is like an Australian gangster or something like that. So I don't know. So yeah, he hasn't done a whole lot. He's got like six movies. Not a ton, but
it looks like he's not done any versions of Journey to the Center of the Earth, which I find that shocking.
Very surprising. This is also written by Ken Seldon, who wrote a movie called White Lies in 1997, and that's it.
Well, because that movie was seldomly seen.
I don't get it.
Didn't you say his name was Kevin Seldon?
Oh, yeah. So, yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Ken Seldon. Okay,
there you go.
So this movie you saw in the theater and you've been hankering for it to be on the show.
Yeah. Since then. For 23 years, I've been asking you to review this on the show.
True. 23 years. Actually, it's almost been that long. The DVD or the Blu-ray came out in 2016. So if you saw it to coincide with that, if it was screened to coincide with that, then it has been almost 23 years.
It was not 2016. It actually was not nearly as long ago as it seems. It was October of 2019.
Oh, okay.
Just right before that pandemic that we all went through.
Yeah. Okay. Well, then, all right. That makes me feel less old because I was thinking that maybe this started in 2016 and I was going to feel very ancient because it seems like not that long ago. Yeah, so this movie, first off, like, talk a little bit, Sean, about why you were so adamant about this being on the show. Because you said you really wanted to do it on the show, but you also didn't want to pick it. You wanted me to pick it because you thought that I would like this movie, I think was the reasoning. But
that partially, but also maybe moreover, the reason was I had all these important tap dancing movies that I needed to pick, you know, instead of, you know, a slasher movie on a show that is, you know, debatably about scary movies most of the time.
Yeah. Instead of the cult movie.
Yeah. Had to review the Criterion Classic Top Hat. Well, but before we get too deep into this at all, I think we should just highlight the fact that we're going to spoil the hell out of Cherry Falls.
Yeah.
I don't think we can really talk about this movie without spoiling it. And it is a movie that for most of the runtime, you know, it's building up a mystery and you probably don't want it spoiled is my feeling. So this is not an easy movie to find necessarily. It is out there. You can get a copy on DVD, but it's not streaming everywhere right now. But I still think it's worth.
Literally, it's streaming nowhere. It is not on. You can't get it on Vudu or Apple or anywhere. Like, you can't even pay for this. Like, it's nowhere at the moment.
But I recommend going nowhere and getting it because, as we'll get into, I think there's a lot worth recommending about this movie. And I would hate if we spoiled it for you. But I first saw this at the 2019 New Beverly All Night Horrorthon. And, you know, that's one of those events where they don't give you the names of the movies before you sit down to watch them. They just kind of unfurl some surprises right in front of you. And this was one of those surprises that was unfurled right there in my lap, you know, as I was sitting in near the back row of the New Beverly. And I mean, really what struck me about the movie more than its quality was just how obscure it was. You know, the fact that there was this post-Scream slasher movie that was made for a budget kind of akin to Scream. You know, this is like a studio-ish looking budget, decent looking movie with famous people in it, you know, that I knew. And yet I had not heard a single thing about this movie. And just kind of...
$14 million, by the way. In my research, I learned that that's the budget.
Yeah, which I think would probably put it in line with, you know, things like Scream or I Know What You Did Last Summer. Maybe slightly cheaper, but not really. Certainly more expensive than like a Blumhouse horror movie would be today, probably, for most of the stuff that they make. But yeah, it was just that. It was just the fact that like, hey, there's this... you know, post-Scream slasher that fits in kind of nicely in that collection of movies that I thought was pretty good. And as we'll get into, it's not my favorite movie in the world or anything, but I was just like, hey, here's a pretty good movie that nobody ever talks about. And it seemed like the kind of movie, for a number of reasons that we'll get into, that you would love. And so I just really wanted you to see it. And I figured, you know, if you're going to see it, you might as well share your thoughts with our listenership.
Okay, I gotcha. But yeah, we were talking about this a little bit over lunch the other day. And yeah, it is shocking that I had never heard of this. I now know the answer as to why I never heard of this and why you never heard of this, why a lot of people have never heard of this. But I was shocked that I had never heard of a post-Scream slasher movie because like that's my bread and butter. Like I loved those Scream movies when they were coming out. I was seeing all this stuff. I was so happy that there was like big budget slasher movies coming out. I was seeing all the I Know What You Did Last Summers, saw all the Urban Legends, saw all the Halloween H2Os, I saw all the Bride of Chucky's, all, you know, everyone that came out. I was watching Disturbing Behavior, Teaching Miss Tingle, all of these. And I never heard of this thing. So it was shocking to me. But I've discovered the reason. Do you know the reason why nobody's ever heard of this thing, Sean?
Well, yeah, I actually didn't know it until this week, but I did see on IMDb's trivia section that basically the MPAA just wouldn't give this movie an R. And so as a result, it never got a cinematic release.
Yeah, never actually came out. It debuted on the USA Network. Oddly enough, crazily enough, which is like if you think you could trim this movie down enough to be on the USA Network, then you could trim it down to get an R rating, I would think. But I don't know how that stuff works. But
I wonder when it aired on USA. I didn't look up that part. And I wonder if it was like years later, you know, like maybe they made this, you know, around the year 2000. They're trying to get it put out. in the form that the director wanted. That doesn't happen. Years go by, maybe. And then, you know, some producer or somebody's like, yeah, I'll cut whatever you want. Just put it on TV. We're trying to make a few bucks.
Yeah, I know. Well, it came out on TV in 2000. I don't know when it was filmed, though. Let's see. In 1998 is when they first announced the movie. And in 1999, they filmed. So, yeah, so pretty soon after. But, yeah, it was released theatrically in Europe. And then it was, yeah, put out in 2000 in America on just normal-ass TV. And probably, I would imagine, just shown the one time. Which is pretty crazy. So yeah, so definitely a very obscure film. Definitely, it got like a small DVD release with one other movie, but that's about it. But
and I think the DVD has been out of print for a long time too.
Yeah, and now there's a Blu-ray out there now, which is pretty much the only place to get it. Because as I said, there's no, you can't rent it or you can't watch it on Netflix or anything like that. But as for the movie itself, this movie takes place in the town of Cherry Falls, Virginia. They wanted to double up their puns here. Cherry Falls is a pun, and Virginia is a pun about the movie. They're just really hammering it home. But there's a killer going around stalking young people. And it turns out, the police piece it together after a few murders that the killer is killing virgins.
Well, when you say they piece it together, it's not like they're doing any real Columbo shit here. The killer carves the word virgin into his victims.
That is true. Yeah. The killer's pretty blatant about their MO.
Otherwise, I think it would be kind of questionable if, you know, after a few murders, the cops are like, wait a minute, all three of these girls were virgins. Like, for them to just put that together so quickly and to have that knowledge on the top of mind. I mean, I guess there is that scene with the morgue attendant or whatever, where he talks about the fact that they medically confirmed that they're virgins. But still, yeah, I think it was the fact that the killer's carving the word virgin on them.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the biggest clue. So then the town basically goes into a freak out. Well, before we get to the freak out, the first kill in this is Jesse Bradford, who is an actor that I know well. And I was like, oh, cool. Like, he's in the opening scene and he gets murdered first. That's sort of like a Marion Crane, sort of Drew Barrymore sort of a thing that they're doing, because Jesse Bradford is a very famous person. But then I looked and like Jesse Bradford had not done anything famous at all. And then I realized Jesse Bradford is not famous. I just really like the movie Bring It On. So it's like, yeah. I was way off base. But still,
I definitely never heard of this kid.
Well, you got to see Bring It On. That's where he really shines. He's also in Hackers. He was one of the hackers, the titular hackers.
Oh, okay.
I forget which one he was.
He wasn't the Phantom Freak, though.
No, he was Joey Pardella.
Oh, okay. I think I know that kid.
He didn't even get a real name. He's not Acid Burn. I don't know. But so he's murdered first, him and his girlfriend. And then... So yeah, I don't know. Then the town just kind of like, there's not a lot to this. And then the town starts freaking out about virginity. And then they, all the kids at school, at high school, plan to have a huge entire class-wide, high school-wide orgy so that they can all lose their virginities. And then they will no longer be on this killer's shit list.
Which I think that's where this movie sets itself apart from other slashers. Like, that is the kind of unique twist here, especially in the year 2000. I think having this high school orgy be a big centerpiece, I think, is kind of unusual.
Yeah, well, that's the interesting post-Scream part of this. It's like, a lot of the post-Scream movies that, like, slasher movies that came out, it's like, looking back, we go, oh, all Scream made all slasher movies like meta and self-aware. But that's not like entirely true. Like, a lot of them were just pretty straight up slasher movies. Like, I Know What You Did Last Summer is just played straight. Urban Legend is just played straight. like H2O when Halloween came back, it was just played straight. Like how, like it was pretty much just Scream and like Bride of Chucky that were like meta. And this, like the entire premise of this is very like, is a satire on slashers. Like the, you know, cause in slashers stereotypically, it's like you have sex and then you get murdered by Jason. But in this, they flip it on its head.
To the point where like there are some parents in this movie who are like rooting for their virginal kids to get laid, which that's a funny kind of inversion of the typical slasher trope.
Yeah, for sure. I guess I was watching some like behind the scenes stuff for research, and I guess the writer of this really, when he was writing it, it was like the humor was a lot more overt and like kind of like it was a lot more satirical and tongue in cheek. And then I guess the director, he really wanted to play it straight and just do like a normal slasher movie. And you can kind of like, after I heard that, I was like, a lot of things fell into place because this movie does seem very confused as to whether or not it's in like, whether or not it's making jokes or whether or not it's a satire, because so much of it is played like really oddly straight for such a silly premise-y movie.
Although I wonder if some of that might also be due to the censorship, you know, like maybe there were more outrageous scenes that would have made it more obvious that this was supposed to be comedic that were just, you know, too outrageous for the USA Network and just got cut.
That could be too. Yeah, but like a lot of stuff, like it seems like it could go either way. Like there's this, like there's a, Brittany Murphy and her dad, who is Michael Biehn from Terminator, have a lot of sexual tension in this. Like there's that scene where like they're like training and then he falls down on her and then they look like they're about to kiss, you know, like that, that whole thing.
Yeah, and she's clearly wearing no bra under her very tight tank top.
Yeah. And that's the kind of, and like that's the kind of thing that on paper seems like it would be a very, it's like satirical sort of a like comedic thing. And then like later there's that scene where he's in bed and he's like begging her to have sex and stuff. And it's like, that seems like it should be a silly thing, but it is played really straight by like the movie plays it straight. And then I think the actors play it straight and it's like very tonally off and weird.
But it, I mean, isn't that kind of, the formula for a successful comedy is that the scenario is ludicrous, but you know, everybody else is treating it seriously.
I mean, yeah, but it's also like, but it's not funny in the end. Like they're playing it so seriously that it's not funny though. Right. Like, or were you laughing? Like, did you find it funny? Like this kind of weirdo stuff? Like
it's more funny just kind of in the abstract of like, you know, you take the 10,000 mile view or whatever of this movie and you're like, I can't believe it's doing these things. But in the moment when you're watching it, like the specific scenes and moments aren't really funny.
Yeah. Yes. I 100% agree. But I think that the writer's intention was that they would be funny at the time.
Yeah. Well, yeah. They hired the guy that made Romper Stomper. What do you really expect?
Yeah. Another scene like that is a scene where Brittany Murphy, who is clearly drunk, makes her boyfriend bite her feet. And it was the grossest thing I've ever seen in my life. But that was another scene.
You're talking about the actress was drunk or the character?
The actress was clearly drunk in that scene, I felt.
Probably.
Like, yeah. I mean, you'd have to be to get through that scene where she keeps telling this guy to bite her feet. But that's another scene where it was just like, what am I supposed to be feeling right now? What is this supposed to be sexy? Is this supposed to be funny? What's happening?
Actually, between this and the Twin Peaks episode that we watched for the boner episode this week, a lot of sexual footplay.
Yeah, yeah. And then, of course, in our own lives, I mean, we saw that huge Marilyn Monroe foot.
Right? Oh, yeah. Can't stop talking about it. That one and Dinny the Dinosaur from Claude Bell's dinosaurs from Pee Wee.
Jay Moore is in this. He plays a teacher. When he is introduced, there is a Macbeth quote on the chalkboard behind him. And I looked up that quote because I was like, oh, this is definitely a clue for like what the movie is going to be about, because it's a very early scene. But it's just a quote about, it's like from the three witches in that story who like tell Macbeth to go out and do murder. But outside of that, I don't know if it was foreshadowing anything in this movie or not, but still it was kind of cool. I like Macbeth. That was cool.
It's honestly, that's why I thought you would like this movie, was that quote on the chalkboard.
I thought so. Let's see. There's a scene where one of the cops says, we're going to have a fuck fest on our hands. That's a funny line. Let's see. Yeah, I don't. Okay, so the killer doesn't wear a mask, which is weird, but instead has like a very long black wig.
Sort of like an Alice in Chains kind of look.
Yeah. Or like a Grudge or a Ringu, I thought.
It's Grunge, not Grudge.
My mistake. But I thought, like, it was like the suspension of disbelief that nobody could see who was under that hair, I thought was like, it just didn't work. Like, this killer needed a mask in order to get away with constantly looking people in the eyes who get away from them and then their identity never being revealed, I thought. But
do you feel like you were able to put together the identity of the killer just on a visual basis?
So we already mentioned spoilers, but we're going to spoil everything. Mostly, yeah. Like, it's very, from the first second you see this killer, it's very obviously not a woman. In the movie,
yeah,
for 95% of the runtime, wants you to believe that it's a woman doing the murders, but it is a dude. And considering the fact that there's only two dudes in this movie, I figured it was one of them, and it turns out it was one of them.
But I also think they cheated a little bit on some of those close-ups where you see the killer's hands, I think were female hands, at least on a couple occasions.
Oh, yeah, that could be, yeah.
Which, that always bums me out when you get to cheat it that way.
Yeah, I don't like those cheats. But also, like, kind of a lackluster-looking killer, which it was just another reason why I think they could have used a mask, because it is... I don't know. I mean,
it's a killer that you can't really show, because if you, you know, show any of it, you know who it is.
Yeah, exactly. But I do think that they were influenced by Norman Bates, and I do think that they were influenced by Dress to Kill. So it kind of has like that look to a certain degree.
Yeah. Movies that don't really show the killer at all.
Yeah.
Just in kind of brief flashes, really. Versus this, you know, he's having full-on action scenes chasing people around for 10 minutes at a clip.
Yeah, they do. Yeah, like they do real Scream-esque action scenes where like Brittany Murphy is like throwing glass bottles at the killer and you know, knocking him over and throwing sharks into him and all this kind of stuff.
That shark moment was pretty incredible.
I like that shark moment. So the reason that Jay Moore is killing everybody is because many years ago, his mom was raped by four well-to-do students.
Well, Jay Moore, we should say, is playing the role of her teacher in this. It's not actually about SNL star Jay Moore becoming unhinged.
He is the teacher.
For that, you got to read his book, Gasping for Airtime.
Is that a real book name?
Yeah, I read it when I was in my 20s. Why? I don't know. I think I was reading any book that was SNL related at a certain point.
I might read actually. That
book. While we're on the subject, I like Jay Moore. I've always liked Jay Moore.
I like Jay Moore. He's really good in a movie that I love called 200 Cigarettes. That's mostly where I know him from, and of course, he's married to that hot lady from the 90s. So I know him from that as well.
Which one is this? Because maybe you didn't get the news. He's married to the owner of the Lakers.
Is that right?
Yeah.
He was married to Nikki Cox, I think, at one point.
That's long gone, I think.
Ah, what a shame.
Yeah, he married this woman that owns the Lakers, and I think it's like one of the richest people in Los Angeles. So good for him.
Yeah, good for him. He's also in Go. Go is a terrific movie. Go and 200 Cigarettes are both New Year's Eve movies. He must love New Year's Eve. Anyway, so he's mad that this happened to his mom. And one of the people who did the rapes was the sheriff, who is also Brittany Murphy's dad.
Who was not the sheriff at the time.
Not the sheriff at the time, just a kid at the time. But now he's the sheriff. And so he wants to, because these four boys took away his mom's innocence, he wants to now take away the innocence of this town, and that is all the virginal kids in town. But also, he does start killing non-virgins for whatever reason near the end of the movie, just because they stopped caring about the rules or something, I guess. which I was really expecting. Like, I expected more, like, silliness to come from this premise. I expected there to be like a scene where like the killer goes to kill two kids, but they go, oh no, we just finished having sex. And then he has to like leave and go find different kids or something like that. But like outside of the idea and the couple of first kills that happen, setting everything up, like they really kind of, and then the fuck fest, I guess at the end, like they really don't do a whole lot with this premise or anything like that. But surprisingly, let's see. There is, I guess now is a good time to mention that this move, I mean, I guess since it was made for TV or released on TV, it goes without saying, but there is no gore in this movie whatsoever. This is one of the tamest slasher movies you'll ever see in your life.
But there is nudity.
Is there nudity?
There's that naked girl in the morgue.
Yeah, there's a dead girl in the morgue.
That might be the only one.
I think
so. Not the sexiest example of nudity.
Not at all. I guess the original version of this, like everybody in the end was just straight up nude. So that would have been a sight to behold. All these kids running away from a sex party nude and getting slashed up. But
I saw that online, you know, the bit of trivia that said, like, you know, the final sex party, the way that he shot it, he insisted that everybody be nude, and it caused a lot of issues with the cutting of it, that they had to edit around that. But I don't know. I'm skeptical that that's true, because you watch that scene, nobody looks nude. I think everybody's wearing like underwear and stuff. So I don't know. Yeah. Did they reshoot that or did they just really cut a lot of it? I don't know.
Yeah, I can't imagine they did reshoots on a $15 million movie that was going to be put out straight to USA Network. But I do think that they did have to cut around a lot, because there's the scene where Jay Moore finally gets to the fuck fest and he's just like slashing people up. But you can't see, you don't see any blood. You don't see any slashing. You don't even see the knife. Like they just really like do a close up of Jay Moore's face. And like, you can kind of see his arm moving and that's it. Like that's whatever is happening in the uncut version of that is probably awesome. Like he's probably just running around cutting up dozens of kids with a knife, but yeah, they really cut it down so that absolutely nothing is happening.
Yeah. I mean, if it had been another nipple torture scene, I would have loved it, but instead it was just close-ups of eyeballs. The sad thing is, I guess the original cut of this and all of the lost footage is reportedly lost forever. Seemingly, nobody's got a copy of that stuff.
Yeah, that's heartbreaking. Because there's the other scene where like the Brittany Murphy's like trying to tell the cop, "Hey, I need your help," and he's like, "Oh, this is my station. I can't just split." And then Jay Moore shows up behind him with an axe. And I'm sure that they filmed that guy being split in half, because otherwise, why would he make that pun or that joke or that say that line? But we see nothing. it just cuts away immediately. And most of the murder scenes in this happen off screen. It's very upsetting. There's a scene that I like where Jay Moore, before Brittany Murphy knows that he's the killer, he asks her to help him bring a trunk into his house. And then they kick it down into the basement. And she's like, oh my God, what's in that trunk? And he's like, oh, it's your dad. And then she opens it and it is her dad. I thought that was really good.
The way that scene unfolds, you kind of expect that to be like the swerve where it's like, this is the final time where, you know, they don't deliver on the killer being the killer, you know, like it's the final false negative, you know, before you really find out. But no, they just go like straight into like, oh yeah, here's the big reveal. Her dad's in the box.
I thought that we would have to go a bit longer to get the killer. Like I thought, you know, like a Scream movie, it would be like the last 5 minutes or whatever. But no, yeah, I like that. And I mean, they kind of have to reveal the killer early because like you said, like they have to show the killer at some point because otherwise it would just be a silhouette the entire time. So like they kind of had to reveal the killer a little bit early just so that we can see the actual killer at some point. But, rather than this like silly woman cosplay. Also, Brittany Murphy to dispatch Jay Moore at the very end. It's very anticlimactic. Like he lunges at her and then she just moves away, like out of the way slightly. And then he falls off a balcony. It's very anticlimactic. It's not a good, not very satisfying.
But again, who knows? Maybe there was some cool moment there where like Jay Moore whips out his dick or something that had to get censored. Who knows?
That could have been. And then it's very heartwarming at the end. What happens is that Michael Biehn, the guy who helped rape this woman 20 years ago or whatever, his daughter and wife cover for him to the cops and they don't rat him out for the rape. So they just cover it up. So that's good. That's a good message for your movie.
With absolutely no examination of what that means or like, yeah. But again, I think that probably is supposed to be fucked up and funny, but the movie doesn't really convey it that well.
Yeah. I definitely think that probably in the script it was meant that way, but yeah, the movie itself kind of treats it like that's the right thing to do kind of tip like, yeah. So I don't know. It's a weird scene. So I don't know. So how do you feel about this movie, Sean? Do you still like it as much as you did the first time you saw it?
Well, seeing any movie in like an all-night marathon scenario, especially I think this was like right in the middle of the evening, so it probably played at like 3 a.m. or something like this. You know, that is a very special kind of circumstance, especially when you're with a crowd of people who are excited to see this. Probably a few of them in the crowd had heard of it and had wanted to see it for a while. I don't think many people there had seen it. You know, that's one thing. Seeing it at home by myself, already knowing who the killer was and not having any bit of that fun reveal to hang some enjoyment on. Yeah, I mean, I didn't like it as much as I did the first time, but I still had a decent time watching this. You know, I think it's still, in terms of like post-Scream slashers, this is one of the good ones. I think that is an area of film, post-Scream slashers, that for the most part is not really that appealing to me. But I thought this had some fun elements to it, you know, despite the fact that it doesn't really have any gore, doesn't really have very many tense moments even. I still liked how early on in this movie it was setting up all of the, you know, potential red herring, you know, potential killers, like, you know, between the overbearing sheriff dad and then also Brittany Murphy's weird oversexed mom, who mm-hmm. rolls around with her quote unquote headlights on. I liked kind of that character, you know, or the horny ass boyfriends. They become a red herring at a certain point. It never really reaches like Scream levels of the audience trying to work out who the killer is and being, you know, super invested in that kind of mystery of it all. But, you know, it's got some of that. And I always liked that, the kind of feeling of like, well, it could be anybody and I can't wait to find out who it is. And I thought in the dialogue, there were some, you know, fun little moments, some playful double entendres, like that line of dialogue where Brittany Murphy's boyfriend tells the mom that her headlights are on. I thought that was fun. And I also got a lot of a Twin Peaks vibe while watching this. And maybe it's just because we're watching it currently, but there's a lot of stuff in the visuals here that's very Twin Peaks-y, you know, with the sheriff's uniforms, the girls being zipped up into body bags, the waterfalls in the woods, the whole scene in this where the kids are kind of processing the death of their classmate at the beginning felt like the first episode of Twin Peaks. The look of the morgue kind of looks like the morgue from Twin Peaks. And I guess even the name of the movie, you know, naming it after a small town and then having the name of the town be a sexual connotation as Twin Peaks is. Although this is not nearly as good a name as Twin Peaks, because I feel like more than half the time I try and Google this movie, I type in Cherry Hill instead of Cherry Falls. And then actually I saw on IMDb earlier today that once upon a time, David Lynch was offered this movie to direct it. They gave him the script and he said that he liked it, but he was in production on Mulholland Drive at the time and couldn't tackle it. So maybe those, you know, Peaks references are somewhat intentional. Who knows?
That's kind of an odd thing, because Mulholland Drive was a movie that was supposed to be a TV movie and then ended up theatrical, which was the exact opposite of this movie's fate. So maybe David Lynch stole all the energy from this movie for his own movie.
It very well could be. I wouldn't put that past old David Lynch. But it's got that kind of Peaks vibe, and I like that about it. Sure, there are a number of downsides. Like, there's definitely a few moments in this that are pretty dumb. You know, you mentioned the shark attack scene where Brittany Murphy cuts the rope from this shark that is hanging above their biology lab or whatever, and it swings across the entire laboratory, and wouldn't you know it, the killer is standing in exactly the perfect place to be struck by it. Like, that's pretty dumb. And the very final shot of this movie with the waterfall turning red, very dumb. Some of these kids are very annoying, like the one raver slash theater kid friend of Brittany Murphy who gets killed pretty early on. I thought he was kind of lame. But none of that really killed it for me. You know, I expect a post-scream slasher is going to have some level of lame things in it. And, you know, despite that, this still had things on offer that I enjoyed. I thought the school itself looked cool. Like Jay Moore's classroom is in this cool room with like these cool, like hardwood floors and like this like level kind of scenario where each like student's desk is on like a different raised level, almost like a college lecture hall or something like this. Yeah, I mean, this is a good source of cinematic toe sucking. If that is something you want to see, I can't remember seeing as much toe sucking in any other slasher movie lately. And also I like to think that Jay Moore's character, who is named Leonard Marlston, is maybe a reference to Leonard Maltin. Who knows? It's kind of close. And if that's the case, I enjoy that kind of thing. So yeah, I mean, overall, this movie is nothing earth-shattering, but I think it's still fairly fun as far as later slashers go. And even if it does kind of fizzle out in the last third of the movie, I thought Brittany Murphy, for the most part, was compelling. I thought Jay Moore was fairly compelling. And overall, I mean, this is just a movie that should not be as out of print as it is. Is it the greatest movie of all time? No, but it's, you know, it's a lot better than some of the other crap that came out in the wake of Scream. And most of those things are pretty easy to stream. So this should be too.
Well, I definitely agree that this should be out there. It's a shame that it's so impossible to get, especially when there is an HD version in the world. But yeah, I pretty much agree with you. I think this is probably in the middle of the pack in terms of post-Scream slashers. It's probably better than I Know What You Did Last Summer, but it's no Urban Legend, that's for sure. Yeah, and I think that, like, I think that if it were possible to see the original X-rated cut, which I'm sure is very tame, you know, because like they were really just cracking down on the stuff in the year 2000. Like, so I'm sure the extreme version of this is not very extreme at all. It just happened to be post Columbine. So like people were squeamish about everything. If it would be possible to see that version, I'm sure I would like this a lot more, but it's in a sad state where this is a movie about violence and sex, and there is no violence or sex in the movie. So it's like, it's a very sad state.
Well, unless toe sucking is your fuck style.
Yeah. Which is not, that was the scariest scene in the whole movie for me. And then after the toe sucking, she puts her shoes back on and she's wearing like these shoes with no socks. She's got to have terrible foot odor because of that. She's probably been walking around all day. She got sweaty feet. Gross. Gross. I hate that scene. So that's like its cardinal sin, I guess. It's this movie about a slasher movie about sex, no slashing in it. Also a terrible underuse of DJ Qualls, who's in this for about 3 seconds. You gotta put him in your movie. You gotta make him front and center, for God's sakes. He's a national treasure, this DJ Qualls. Yeah, I mean, Michael Biehn's good. He's always good in everything. Jay Moore's cool. I've never really been a Brittany Murphy fan, I guess. I don't know. Like, I know everybody's all torn up about her death and like, oh my God, she was going to be the biggest star in the world. She was so talented. Based on what? Clueless? I mean, what did she do? She didn't do a whole lot. I don't know. I don't get it. I don't think she's great in this. She doesn't have a whole lot to do, though. Yeah, I don't know. It's all right. I want to like this movie because I'm sure the unfiltered version is probably very fun. But as it stands, there's not. Yeah. I don't know. It's just like a made-for-TV slasher movie, I guess. Like, that's about all it is. So that's as good as it can be, I guess.
Yeah, I think that's fair. But it's not fair to overlook Brittany Murphy's role in the movie Freeway.
Oh, well, that is a good point. That is a good point. I mean, I do like her in Clueless. I don't want to be too hard on her, but I mean, she didn't. I mean, she was really bad in Sin City.
Well, that whole movie is really bad.
Yeah. No, I like Sin City.
No, you don't.
I do, but she's not good in it. She's
just like, you just like Las Vegas.
It doesn't even take place in Las Vegas.
No, but don't they call Vegas Sin City?
Well, they do call it that.
Yeah. You're getting it confused with this Frank Miller movie.
Well, that could be. Yeah, so I don't know. I guess that wraps it up for Cherry Falls. So I guess
now it does. Comes
the real part of the show. Everybody's favorite part of the show. The part of the show where we make our choices, Sean.
This is where we play a game?
Yeah.
Okay, well.
Or perhaps we don't play a game. Perhaps we just have already have a pick to go with. I don't know. However you want to do it. I don't mean to put any pressure on you.
Well, actually, I do have a game to be played. I've got two movies that I'm just going to go out and, you know, go right out and tell you what they are, what their names are, their years of release. I'm not going to play any funny games here. No tricky business. I'm going to tell you what the movies are, and you just pick what you want to watch in 2 weeks. It's pretty simple. Nothing tricky going on here. Okay. I made reference to it earlier that there is a long running series. I kind of tried to mislead you and make it sound like I was talking about Journey to the Center of the Earth. But I wasn't. I was talking about a franchise. Mm-hmm. Your one of your picks is Scream.
Oh.
From 2022.
Oh.
Which I have not seen yet, but I am curious to watch because I have recently watched the four Screams leading up to it. And I was thinking about watching Screams 5 and 6 this Schlocktober season. So if you want to join me and watch Scream 5, aka Scream, that's one of your picks. Or if you want to go a different direction and escape this kind of post-Scream slasher world, well, we could go with a pre-Scream slasher, and that would be Motel Hell from 1980.
Starring Rory Calhoun.
Starring Rory Calhoun. And it's one of the few, you know, I tried hard to find like a video store era kind of classic horror movie that we hadn't done on the show. It's getting to be a pretty slim list. And so this was one of the, the video store era classics that I felt like we've overlooked on JFT.
That is true. We haven't done that. This is a hard decision, because I do love that old school grimy horror stuff. But as we've talked about, there's something about like a slick, high budget slasher movie with high production value that just really tickles me. So you watched the first four Screams recently. You liking them? Is that why you're thinking about continuing on to part five? You've enjoyed yourself so far?
Not really. I don't really like them, but I do feel compelled to finish it out because I've seen, four of them. And I don't know. I have a weird affection for this series, despite the fact that I really only like the first movie.
Yeah, I like the first two, but... I rewatch them a lot. Every Halloween, I think I rewatch the entire franchise. I have some sort of strange affection for them. It's mostly because of part one, I think. And also the Jay and Silent Bob cameo in part three. I like that a lot. So I'm a little torn.
Motel Hell, I've not seen since I was probably like 21 years old or something. It's been a long time. But I remember enjoying it quite a bit.
Yeah, I think I saw it on like USA Up All Night as a kid or something. It was the last time I saw it. Well, I would say if you didn't like any of those Scream sequels, you're most likely not going to like part five. I didn't really like part five. So rather than us do a movie.
It gets me closer to part six, which maybe I'll like.
Maybe. Six is better than five, I would say. I'm really torn on this. Because I feel like I would feel bad if we watched Scream 5 and then both didn't like it. But then again, maybe it's fun to make fun of a movie that we don't like. Especially if you're going to end up watching it anyway.
I feel like there's good odds I'm going to watch both of these movies either way.
Okay. Let's do Motel Hell.
Okay.
Let's do that. Because I don't want to watch Scream 5 again. The movie kind of sucks. But I'm probably going to watch it anyway. Because like I said, I watched that entire franchise every Halloween. But let's do Motel Hell. I've been wanting to rewatch it. I haven't seen it since I was like 12. Let's do it.
Yeah, it's got that cool pig head guy, with the pig on his head.
Yeah. And it's got, a guy standing on his two hind legs,
Sure.
I like that.
Well, it's okay. Settled then. It 1980s Motel Hell. Is it streaming anywhere? Let's see if that's a thing.
It's on Tubi.
There you go.
The perfect place to see a movie.
Free for all. Oh, it's on Pluto TV. It's on all kinds of platforms.
Oh, it's on Freevee?
Looks like it's on YouTube for free.
All right. Yeah, that's an easy one. All right, Motel Hell. And wait a minute. The director of Motel Hell did a movie called The Land Time Forgot and At the Earth's Core. Is this a trick? Are you just leading me into more Center of the Earth movies?
What you don't know is that he only agreed to make the other movies if he could make Motel Hell at the same time. And it turns out Motel Hell is a loosely changed version of The Journey to the Center of the Earth. No, that's not true.
Oh my God. This is
there incredible. Are no tricks.
Okay. All right. It's settled. So that's what we're doing in 2 weeks. Next week, of course, Kevin Moss will be joining us. We're going to be doing a Schlocktober event. We're going to be talking about three horror movies, Pet Sematary 2, Jengoku, and Curse of Frankenstein, a Hammer horror movie. Just to prove that I love British people. I like David Lynch. I like British people. That's my new thing. I'm liking all the stuff I used to not like. That's my whole thing in 2023. So we're doing Curse of Frankenstein. Send us some voicemails. 347-746-JUNK. Let us know how you feel about Hammer Horror or Cherry Falls. Or if I made the right choice, should I have picked Scream 5? Am I going to regret it for the rest of my life? Let me know. Find us in the Discord. Find us on Patreon. For God's sakes, go to Patreon. Patreon.com/junkfooddinner. We are putting out bonus episodes where me and Sean talk about Twin Peaks. And those episodes are longer than these normal episodes. We're over there just chatting about every single episode of Twin Peaks. Probably going to be watching the movies. Probably going to watch all of David Lynch's filmography again once that's over. I like David Lynch. That's what we're doing over there. We're reviewing his books, all kinds of stuff. So do that. Email us, jfdpodcast@gmail.com. Find us in the Discord, all that kind of stuff. So until next week, this is Parker for Sean saying thanks for having fun.